Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June the 19th, 2020. Section A. Midland Memorial Hospital. Coronavirus crisis is not over. By Caitlin Randall. CRANDLE at MRT.com. Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Russell Myers said during a press conference on Thursday that a recent spike in Midland's coronavirus cases was predictable as businesses continue to reopen and is evidence of the need to practice stricter social distancing and other precautions. The City of Midland Health Department reported 23 new positives on Thursday, bringing the total case count to 287. There have been 158 cases confirmed during the month of June, accounting for more than half of all the cases since the pandemic began. "This crisis is not over by any stretch of the imagination," Myers said during the press conference. Midland Memorial has not seen an uptick in hospitalizations, as other hospitals have statewide, but he said he does not expect that to change because the majority of new infections have been among people under 50 who are able to recover at home. There were 5 coronavirus cases in the hospital on Thursday, according to Myers. 4 were in the regular COVID-19 unit, and 1 patient was in the critical care unit. If Midland Memorial did need to accommodate an influx of patients, Myers said they have the capacity to do so. Myers said hospital operations would likely return to what they were at the height of the pandemic, when 30 residents from Midland Medical Lodge were inpatients at the facility, and staff would be reassigned from other areas of the hospital to the COVID-19 unit. Myers said it's expected for the demographics of those infected to skew younger because young people are more active in the community. He implored young Midlanders to wear masks, practice social distancing and hand hygiene to protect those who are more at risk. "When you're gathering and you are a 20 or 30-year-old, aren't concerned about your own risk of infection, you should be very concerned about your grandmother's risk of infection. And do everything that you can to protect those loved ones in your family and in your community who are much more vulnerable." Additionally, Myers said starting Thursday, the hospital will no longer be providing masks to visitors. "Each patient is allowed 1 visitor during their time in the hospital, except those in pediatrics and labor and delivery, who are allowed 2 visitors. Visitors are required to wear masks when entering and during their time in the hospital." Previously, MMH was providing a cloth mask to patients and visitors. Patients will continue to be given a mask, but visitors will now be required to bring their own. He said they do not have enough masks to continue giving them to visitors, and visitors who do not have a mask will be turned away until they procure a mask or other face covering. Myers emphasized the importance of wearing masks not only in the hospital but in all public spaces to curtail the number of community-acquired cases. "If you don't take any other message away from what we're saying here today, it's wear a mask because it works. It will help limit the spread of this infection." MISD board leader says the community wants us focused on education. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. "The board understands the sensitivity of this issue and is continuing to listen to this community's differing views on it. Meanwhile, I believe that all members of this community are united in wanting us to continue to focus our time and efforts in improving the educational environment, resources, and outcomes for all students." That is what Midland ISD Board President Rick Davis stated in an email when asked about the petitions regarding Robert E. Lee High School. It was similar to 2017, the last time petitions were created about the name of the Midland High School, named after the commander of the Confederate States Army during the Civil War. It is still my impression that this community wants us to continue to focus all our time and resources in improving education for all students, Davis said. We are making significant progress in that regard, and I think we would be well served in continuing to dedicate all our attention in continuing to do so. A petition calling for the name of Robert E. Lee High School to be changed had 3,634 supporters as of 7:30 p.m. Wednesday. The petition calling for the name to remain had 2,274 supporters. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick responded to a question about the petitions with a comment that included, "Midland ISD understands that words, including names, matter. Names are how we represent ourselves to the outside world, and just like an individual's last name, our school names carry a historical tie to previous generations. The names of Midland Lee and Midland High School were chosen by our forebears at particular moments in time and passed down to us through the decades. I have said many times that schools are a reflection of their communities. Currently, we are seeing the community engage in conversation around Midland Lee. If and when the board elects to participate in a formal way in this conversation, they would follow the administrative regulations which cover the process by which schools are named. Midland ISD administrative regulations state, school board approval shall be required in all matters pertaining to individual schools as follows. Naming of all school buildings, campuses, facilities, and installations. Designation of school colors. Officially adopted nickname, mascot, insignia, or emblem, and all school banners, flags, and pennants." Here's a commentary by James E. Fuller, Midland ISD board member. "This Juneteenth, let's celebrate the resiliency of the human spirit. I celebrate Juneteenth within the context of present-day America. Slaves in Texas received the news of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, a year late. It was a document that declared all slaves free to experience life, liberty, justice, the right to move about freely, the right to pursue and exercise political and economic freedom, the right to pursue happiness, and the freedom to enhance their intellect, to experience life without shackles. As I approach the 2020 celebration of Juneteenth, I am once again haunted by the reality that what we celebrate as African Americans and other Americans in general is the illusion of freedom. In my opinion, we, all of us, are with shackles. After emancipation, America introduced new shackles into the American experiment. For example, the reaction to the Reconstruction produced laws that ran contrary to the grand democratic experience. They were laws that disenfranchised black citizens and destroyed lives and property. It was Operative Jim Crow / Ku Klux Klan. The civil rights movement and subsequent activist initiatives in opposition to the shackles of discrimination and segregation serve as relevant reminders that true emancipation is not yet. Today, voter suppression reminds me that emancipation in America remains in progress. Redlining reminds me that emancipation is in progress. Police brutality, remember the paddy rollers, reminds me that we are yet to be totally emancipated. The American prison industrial complex, new Jim Crow, is yet another example. Moreover, health and economic disparities, as well as the pandemic of systemic racism, bigotry, sexism, corruption, and greed, weigh America down like the shackles that they are. For me, Juneteenth 2020 is one of the most significant celebrations of Black American emancipation to date. It is no longer America's celebration. Across the globe, change is in the air. It is active. It is vocal, it is energetic, it is inclusive, and it is focused. It is no longer a picnic in the park, for people around the world are in the process of breaking shackles. Finally, Juneteenth 2020 for me is a celebration of hope and optimism, and it is a celebration of the resiliency of the human spirit. Here's a commentary from Courtney Ratliff. Celebrate this Juneteenth like no other before. On this day in 1865 in Galveston, Union Army General Gordon Granger read the federal orders declaring that all enslaved persons in the state of Texas were now free. One of Abraham Lincoln's most noteworthy pieces of legislation, the Emancipation Proclamation had been signed 2.5 years prior, but the Civil War did not conclude until April of 1865 with the surrender of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, so word was slow to spread in the South. The nation has taken on Juneteenth, as the day that slavery finally ended in the United States. It is a day that has been celebrated as Black Independence Day and our nation's second Independence Day ever since, but this year in 2020, Juneteenth has a whole new meaning. On March 25th, the world watched a black man's life taken away by the people sworn to protect it. We watched George Floyd declare the words blacks in America have been saying for centuries, "I can't breathe." In the 8 minutes and 46 seconds that the world witnessed another unarmed black man take his last breath, the world woke up to the realities of the struggle. COVID-19 took away all the usual distractions when these tragedies occur. We had no sports, no school, no travel, and no excuses. Everyone had to watch and react. Instantly, the movement for the freedom from oppression began again. The Black Lives Matter movement gained unprecedented steam. Not only did every major city in the United States rise up in protest, small communities throughout the country voiced their support for the simple concept that all lives can't matter until black lives actually matter. For the first time in this country's history, protests were held in all 50 of the United States. The world has joined in on the movement with protests seen in countries on nearly every continent. This is now a true global effort. So this year, Juneteenth has a whole new meaning. Midlanders are experiencing this new movement for equality in unprecedented ways. We have seen protest marches and rallies led by our youth, determined not to prolong the treatment of their family members before them. We are on the cusp of epic change in our city, whether people embrace the change or not. This Juneteenth is different. This year, we can celebrate a new awakening in our city and country. Black Midlanders and Americans are moving toward a newfound freedom. This Juneteenth has a whole new meaning because, at long last, people are realizing what that freedom truly means. Today and this weekend, our great city and nation will celebrate this important moment in American history. We will attend rallies and participate in the various activities being offered around the city. We will honk and wave at cars and floats in the annual Juneteenth parade on Friday morning. We will gather at Washington Park to enjoy the power and beauty of black excellence. This Juneteenth needs to be celebrated like none before. Stay safe, wear your mask, and embrace the beauty of our culture. This Juneteenth is truly special. Local businesses have gifts for Dad, by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis at hearstmp.com. Need help finding a last-minute Father's Day gift? Want to take Dad out on his special day? Look no further than some local businesses. Midland Meat Company offers a wide variety of beef that would be great for a Father's Day cookout. Midland Meat Company has gift cards available if a cookout isn't on the weekend agenda, and also offers salts and rubs. The store also has started carrying a variety of bison coolers and coffee beans. Midland Meat Company also has hats, t-shirts, and insulated tumblers to keep Dad's favorite drink cool. Sergeant Peppers at 2101 West Wadley, number 24, has many options for Father's Day gifts. The store carries John Hart design and has a wide variety of items such as coasters, passport holders, wallets, luggage tags, bird bags, small revolver cases, shave kits, and duffel bags. Grandma's Mild, a gourmet snack mix, is available with other cooking utensils that can be selected from a variety of colors. The store carried Lodge cast iron pots and pans and is taking orders through email, Instagram, and Facebook for those who might not have time to shop around. For the musically inclined or music-loving dad, a trip to Endless Horizons in Odessa might be a great way to celebrate. The store carries a variety of records, CDs, and other music merchandise, such as band t-shirts and Funko Pop figurines. If Dad is getting back into records, the shop has box sets and record players for sale. Endless Horizons requires that all shoppers wear masks and sanitize their hands. Bean and Grape serves brunch from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sunday. Looking to celebrate Dad on Saturday, the restaurant has introduced a small plates menu. Those who have a busy Father's Day planned can order coffee online from Bean and Grape. Tall City Brewing Company will be open from noon to 5. Gilly's Mobile Diner will be serving food in the parking lot. The brewery has introduced a new light beer, single malt and single hop, called the Carol Smash Tin. Tall City Brewing also has gift cards, growlers, new shirts, and other merchandise available for Father's Day gifts. Dad might like to spend their Father's Day at the movies now that Synergy and Big Sky Drive-In have reopened. Synergy is offering a Family 4 bundle for $24.99, starting today. The movie theater is showing older movies such as Jaws, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, The Goonies, and Jurassic Park. Newer titles now showing include Playing with Fire, Blumhouse Fantasy Island, and Bloodshot. Big Sky Drive-In will start showing double features today. The double features include Minions and Pets, Dirty Dancing and Footloose, and The Wretched and Annabelle.
Hello, this is Michael reading another local article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, June 19th. Coronavirus in Midland, 87 this week, 158 this month. County's total stands at 287 confirmed cases. By Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported a combined 49 confirmed coronavirus cases on Wednesday and Thursday. That two-day total brought the weekly total to 87, which probably guarantees a weekly total of 100 if the number is confirmed today, consistent with those announced this month. The 100 this week provides some light on the spike currently taking place in Midland County, which had 129 cases over the course of more than 2 months through May. In June, there had been 158 cases, which is 55% of the 287 confirmed cases in Midland County. According to the Midland Health Department's website on Thursday, only 89 of those who have tested positive, 33.7%, have recovered or completed isolation. The 49 announced on Wednesday and Thursday were more of the same this week. The Midland Health Department reports that 45 were younger than 50. That means that of the 86 confirmed cases this week, 78, more than 90%, are 49 or younger. For the third straight day, 20-somethings led the way. On Thursday, it wasn't close, with 15 of the 23 confirmed cases being 20 to 29. During the course of the pandemic, 70 of the 287 or 24.3%, have been in their 20s. Travel was the top source of exposure Wednesday and Thursday with a total of 18, followed by community acquired at 17. All confirmed cases but one are self-isolating at home. A man in his 20s is an inpatient at Midland Memorial Hospital. The health department also reported Wednesday the confirmed cases were residents working at the following locations. Oceans, last worked June 11th. Julian Gold, last worked June 11th. Deonda and Sarabia Law Firm, last worked Friday. Orbit Construction, last worked Friday. Sonic on Big Spring Street, last worked Tuesday. Bird Oil Field Services, last worked Friday. Imperative Chemical, last worked June 11th. Midland Women's Clinic, last worked Monday. HEB on Loop 250, last worked Sunday. HEB on Loop 250, last worked June 10th. Century Energy, last worked on Tuesday. And State Farm, last worked Monday. On Thursday, the health department reported the confirmed cases were residents working at the following locations. Triple Threat Sports Bar and Grill, last worked June 6th. Fasken Oil and Ranch, last worked June 12th. BP Supply, last worked June 8th. Targa Resources, last worked June 12th. Line Quest, last worked June 12th. TCC Sand Blasting and Coating, last worked Wednesday. The Department of Public Safety, last worked Monday. And Endurance Lift Solutions, last worked Monday.
Carlsbad Caverns National Park reopens to the public, by Mike Smith from the Carlsbad Current Argus. Carlsbad Caverns National Park was reopened to the public on Tuesday with reduced number of visitors and limited hours, according to the U.S. National Park Service. Entrance tickets to the park are limited to $550 per day and available on first-come, first-served basis at the visitor center. Robert Deffer, CEO of the Carlsbad Chamber of Commerce, welcomed the reopening of Carlsbad Caverns. The temporary closure at Carlsbad was implemented in March, and Deffer said the chamber was receiving inquiries from visitors asking when the closure would be lifted. "It's good to see them opening up. It's good for our economy," he said. While Carlsbad Caverns National Park is open, Guadalupe Mountains National Park, south of Carlsbad, remains closed, said park spokeswoman Elizabeth Jackson. She said use of trails, camping, and backcountry hikes are prohibited. Jackson said an uptick of coronavirus cases in Culbertson and Hudspeth counties in Texas and Eddy County in New Mexico meant park staff must follow federal guidelines to keep the park closed. She said park managers met weekly to review the status of the closure. "We hope we can open soon. We have to look at the safety of the visitors and the guests." Brantley Lake State Park and Living Desert Zoo and Garden State Park, north of Carlsbad, are open on a limited basis. Brantley has been very busy over the past couple of weeks, averaging 1,350 visitors per a four-day week. Living Desert has also been busy, averaging 480 visitors per day on a four-day week. She said Brantley Lake and State Park is open 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday through Sunday, and Living Desert is open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday through Sunday. She said Brantley is capped at 25% capacity. Torres said visitors must adhere to COVID-19 health orders when visiting state parks. When visiting any open park, the public must wear face coverings during face-to-face interactions, maintain social distance of at least 6 feet, and stay in groups of five or less. Torres said park rangers are keeping an eye on capacity limits. Rangers will inform visitors when capacity at a park has been reached. Torres said park staff are cleaning in line with CDC guidelines, but also encourage visitors to bring their own hand sanitizer. "We also encourage the public to recreate responsibly and pack trash out to help protect our natural resources."
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June 19, 2020. Peace Poster Contest Winner. Jake Jones, who will be a sixth grader at St. Anne's School, won third place at the Lions Club District Level Poster Contest. With Jake is Local Lions Club member Don Eckerty. Journey of Peace was the theme for the Lions Club 31st Annual Worldwide Peace Poster Contest. City pools to open on alternate days. Doug Russell Pool and Washington Family Aquatic Center are open, but because of staffing and coronavirus limitations, are operating on alternate days. Russell will be open Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Washington will be open Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Both pools will be closed on Mondays for maintenance and training. Entry passes, which are $3, will be sold for three-hour sessions. They go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before the posted opening times and are good only for the day of purchase. Punch cards will not be sold this year. Because of staffing limitations and coronavirus precautions, there won't be private parties, lap swim times, swimming lessons, or family nights. Pool furniture will be removed from both pools, but swimmers will be allowed to bring chairs. The schedule is Washington, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday and Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. and 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday. Doug Russell, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. First Med of Midland, 201-1403, www.midlandurgentcareclinics.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab, PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. Cash price for office visit, $120 to $150. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 Nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 Nurse or 221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601. ercare24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, we'll need to pay copay. Rest will be billed insurance. Copay waived for first responders. Source, Midland Health. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. United Supermarket, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday, 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday, HEB, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Customers 60+, orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60+, with disabilities or at risk. Today in Texas history. In 1865, Union troops arrived in Galveston with news that the Civil War was over and that all remaining slaves in Texas were free, an event celebrated to this day as Juneteenth. In 2009, billionaire R. Allen Stanford was indicted and jailed on charges his international banking empire was really just a Ponzi scheme built on lies, bluster, and bribery. Stanford was sentenced to 110 years in prison after being convicted of bilking investors in a $7.2 billion scheme that involved the sale of fraudulent certificates of deposits. Today in history. Today is Friday, June 19, the 171st day of 2020. There are 195 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On June 19, 1964, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was approved by the U.S. Senate 73-27 after surviving a lengthy filibuster. On this date, in 1953, Julius Rosenberg, 35, and his wife, Ethel, 37, convicted of conspiring to pass U.S. atomic secrets to the Soviet Union, were executed at Sing Sing Prison in Ossining, New York. Today's birthdays. Actress Kathleen Turner is 66. Singer, dancer, choreographer Paula Abdul is 58.
The opinion page. Here's a guest editorial from the Dallas Morning News. Air Force's new chief of staff offers words of wisdom for America. Last week, the U.S. Senate took an historic step. It confirmed Charles Q. Brown, Jr. as the chief of staff of the U.S. Air Force, making him the first black officer to lead one of America's major military branches. It would be wrong to celebrate Brown's appointment as a sort of counterbalance to the injustices sparking demonstrations around the country. We cannot point to the achievements of some African Americans as a way to deny the injustice faced by all African Americans. To do so would be a tone-deaf misunderstanding of the long lingering effects of what has been called America's original sin. Too many were quick to use that line of reasoning after the election of President Barack Obama. But it would also be wrong not to celebrate this occasion because it does represent progress. It is a milestone on a march in the right direction toward greater equality, where everyone, regardless of race, is free to succeed and is empowered to do so. General Brown was born in San Antonio and graduated from Texas Tech. He has served as commander or deputy commander at multiple high-level posts, including the Pacific Air Forces, the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, the Pacific Air Combat Operations Staff, and the U.S. Central Command. Brown has earned his success, and we applaud President Donald Trump for appointing him and the Senate for confirming him. And we might go further to note our appreciation for Brown's perspective on this historic occasion. In a powerful and personal video he made for those under his command, the general spoke with honesty and candor about a history of racial issues and my own experiences that didn't always sing of liberty and equality. Brown said, "I can't fix centuries of racism in our country, nor can I fix decades of discrimination that may have impacted members of our Air Force. I'm thinking about how I can make improvements, personally, professionally, and institutionally, so that all airmen, both today and tomorrow, appreciate the value of diversity in a conservative environment where they can reach their full potential. I'm thinking I don't have all the answers on how to create such an environment. I just want to have the wisdom and knowledge to lead during difficult times like these. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead, participate in, and listen to necessary conversations on racism, diversity, and inclusion. I want the wisdom and knowledge to lead those willing to take committed and sustained action to make our Air Force better." Those words grow out of a model of rest for the rest of our nation would do well to follow. Practice empathy. Embrace honesty. Fight injustice. Do what you can to make the country better. In General Brown, we see patriotism mixed with realism, strength mixed with humility, wisdom mixed with resolve. It should be clear that, with Brown, the Air Force is in good hands and that others might gain something from considering the wisdom in his words. Obituary. Bill Leonard of Midland went to be with his Lord and Savior, peacefully surrounded by his family and pastor, on June 16th. Bill was born in Martin County on September 8th, 1933, to Carl and Emma Leonard. He graduated from Midland High in 1953. After retiring from Arco Oil and Gas, he enjoyed jewelry making, woodworking, photography, and traveling and volunteering at Midland Memorial Hospital. He is survived by the love of his life, Maggie, as well as his sons and two sisters, as well as 9 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren. and many nieces and nephews. Services will be held at Alamo Heights Baptist Church at 2 p.m. on Saturday, June 20th, with Pastor Robert Murphy officiating. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Hospice of Midland or Alamo Heights Baptist Church or Midland Memorial Hospital Auxiliary or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, June 19th, 2020. Section A. County Hits 300 Cases by Michael Merlot. The Ector County Health Department reported that they have had 300 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the county in a Thursday press release. The numbers detailed that 243 cases are active, 133 more cases are probable, and the probable cases are due to the antigen test. The county reported that 183 COVID-19 patients have recovered from the virus, 167 people have pending test results, and 7 Ector County residents have died from COVID-19 complications. Since the economy has opened back up, some contact tracers have gone back to their original jobs, and the health department is accepting applications for people to do COVID-19 contact tracing. During Thursday's virtual hospital briefing, Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that 171 people have tested positive at MCH and 15 COVID-19 patients are in the hospital. 12 patients are on a designated floor and 4 of them are from focused care at Odessa Nursing Home. 3 patients are in the critical care unit, and 1 of them is from focused care at Crane. No MCH patients are on ventilators, and 180 test results are pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown reported that out of 533 tests, 34 people have tested positive, 485 have tested negative, and 14 tests are pending. 3 positive patients are in the hospital, and 2 of them are now recovering after coming off ventilators. No ORMC patients are on ventilators. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said that Wednesday he had a phone call with the health department. The health department is going out and hiring new contact tracers. They are going to be hiring 15 or 16 new people, training them and getting them to do contact tracing, he said, adding that even with the new contact tracers, they still will be not able to keep up with this volume. Saravanan said that the health department is only able to contact trace the confirmed cases, and they haven't done any of the probable cases. There's a lot of positives out there, positives from the antigen test that have not been contact traced. Saravanan said to multiply the 133 probable cases by 4, and that could be the amount of people walking around in the community who have not been instructed to quarantine. Mayor David Turner referenced the San Antonio mask mandate that was put in place after they had a dramatic increase in cases. I'm going to do some research on that to see if they're enforcing it, how they're enforcing it. I'll be able to look at that and kind of give you a more educated opinion Monday, he said. The health department reported that the increased amount of cases has come from increased testing. However, increased positive tests mean we have an increased burden of the virus. So the virus certainly appears to be more prevalent now than it ever has been, said Dr. Timothy Benton, who also stressed the importance of mask wearing. There's a bright side to all of this that we're not seeing the overrun of critical ill patients, he said. In other news, Representative Brooks Landgraf reported he had a conference call Thursday with Governor Abbott and the Texas Education Agency Commissioner Mike Morath to update Texas legislators on the state's plan for the 2020-2021 school year and an update on nursing homes. Landgraf sent some of his notes to the Odessa American. He reported that classes will take place on school campuses for the 2020-2021 school year and that modifications are being made to protect students and teachers. He detailed that the Texas Health and Human Services Commission is also working on a plan for nursing home visitation that would allow people to see their loved ones in person. An announcement to ease restrictions at about 90% of nursing homes is coming soon, he detailed. He also wrote that local governments cannot punish people who aren't wearing face coverings, while local governments can now implement Center for Disease Control, which is broadly understood to mean that local governments can require businesses to require customers to wear face coverings. Longtime Odessa Teacher Scores by Ruth Campbell. A longtime Odessa teacher has won the prestigious Teaching Superstar honor from Governor Greg Abbott. Don Potter was shocked when he received the certificate and letter in the mail. The certificate says it is in honor of Teacher Appreciation Week. He was recognized for being an innovative, hardworking teacher in the classroom and virtual classroom and not missing a beat throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Now retired from Ector County ISD and Odessa Christian School, Potter tutors 35 to 40 students from kindergarten through adult in his office at 2020 East 8th Street. Potter said he was very proud of the award. And secondly, I don't think I'm the only one doing this, he said. All through Ector County, there are many teachers, and maybe there are others who have gotten the award. It's amazing that I was able to continue tutoring 35 to 40 kids without missing a lick right in the middle of the whole coronavirus. We never slowed down. I didn't slow down one bit. We all just slipped over to Skype. I have some who don't have computers and it's a little more awkward, but we do FaceTime and I actually hold the camera while I'm having them read. The reason I'm still in this business after all these years is when I started work with Ector County, they taught me how to do a reading inventory. I told myself if I don't get results every year, I'm going into another business. All these kids, they take a test when they come in and they take a test throughout the program. So I know the results I'm getting. I'm happy with that and I love helping kids, Potter said. A native of Rising Sun, Indiana, Potter said he subbed at every grade level and every campus full-time for 5 years and found he had a knack for teaching. He has taught bilingual education, reading dyslexia, and writing in cursive, to name a few. Potter's teaching philosophy, written on a chalkboard, says, "To teach the heart where lies the gold, my goal shall even be with warm love and true kindness for all the world to see." It's a joy unspeakable, Potter said of teaching. His tutoring business serves children from public, private, and homeschool environments. I have a lot of documents and books and things that I've written that I put on the screen. A lot of what I do uses a document camera, so when the kids come to me, I can put a book or anything I want to teach down, and they can see it online. So this is how I can teach cursive handwriting, or I teach printing. I have two methods that I've developed. I call it shortcut to manuscript, and the other one's called shortcut to cursive. So I have two methods, and a lot of my material is online for free. In fact, almost everything I do, so teachers can access it. And I have a lot of YouTube training for teachers that shows exactly how I teach my cursive and my manuscript, and how I teach phonics. And quite frankly, it's very exciting to be working on my own. I enjoy it, Potter said. He laid out a number of books that he's published on phonics, and on a recent Wednesday was teaching 6-year-old Troy My how to read. Kevin Atkinson, who was helping Potter, said Mai would notice the same word in multiple places and point out similar words in a story. He's really, really smart, Atkinson said. Potter said he wants to bring the science of reading to the Permian Basin. The science, I think, is really important. So when I give my assessments, I give what they call phonemic awareness tests. I think if we teach the kids to spell, they'll learn to read. I think spelling is the basis of the whole thing, Potter said. For his part, Mai is happy he's learning to read, as is Potter. I like to read a lot, Mai said softly. Two of Mai's favorite books are The Princess and the Pea and Sleeping Beauty, both of which have finger puppets, so he and Potter can act the story out. Mai is also learning to write in cursive, which he said is pretty. Potter said he keeps progress sheets on his students, and about half the parents stay around to see how their child is doing. Potter said he has a lot of his PowerPoints online for free. It's not all me, he said. A lot of it is what the parents do in between with their kids. And again, that's what makes it fun, because it's drawing families together. Originally from Rising Sun, Indiana, Potter started out at Indiana University and got his degree in Bible from Cincinnati Christian University. His major was in Bible, but his minor was in education. He also has attended Odessa College and got his certification from the Region 18 Education Services Center. Twyla Greenfield has known Potter for about 40 years and nominated him for the Governor's Award. She was the principal at Odessa Christian School during some of the time Potter taught there. Greenfield said Potter has his own method of teaching that has proven effective, and she has nothing but praise for him. His dedication and devotion ensured that everybody learns how to read, because that is the number one priority, she said. Greenfield said she was surprised that Potter won the Governor's Award just because you never know. I just took a chance and nominated him and was pleasantly surprised, Greenfield said. UTPB Camp offers Time in Gym by Sam Waller. UTPB men's basketball coach Josh Newman is ready to get back in the gym. Newman will conduct a pair of basketball skills camps next week for students in elementary and middle school, but space is limited. A Monday and Tuesday camp for 3rd through 6th graders and a Wednesday-Thursday camp for 7th through 9th graders are each limited to 40 students. For Newman, the main thing is to give the students a chance to be active as the COVID-19 pandemic drags on. We weren't sure if we wanted to do it or not, Newman said. But after visiting with different parents and people in the community, I think kids are really looking for something to do. And I think parents are looking for something for their kids to do. We've limited our numbers, shortened our days, and made it cheaper. Our biggest thing right now is we want to take every precaution to keep everybody safe, and while doing that, give them the opportunity to get back in the gym, be around their friends, have some fun, and obviously develop their skills as a basketball player. Camp sessions will be from 9 a.m. to noon each day at UTPB. The camps, which cost $80 per camper, are open to boys and girls. To register online, visit www.utpbbasketballcamps.com. We are not going to have any walk-ups, Newman said. We're having everybody pre-register. Anybody who wants to attend camp needs to register before Saturday. Newman stressed that precautions to combat the coronavirus are in place. We're going to be checking temperatures before, during, after, he said. We'll have sanitizer before they walk in the gym, before they leave the gym, during any break. We're going to have our kids in groups. We're going to try to keep them with the same group as much as possible. We also have a basketball for every camper. The goal is every camper uses the same ball the entire day. We'll wipe those balls down at the end of the day, then the next day do the same thing. After the second day of camp, the kids will actually take the balls home. We're just going to try to do everything we can to keep everybody safe. Obviously, at any time, if anybody feels a little bit under the weather or if we notice someone isn't feeling right, then we'll sit them out. Come Monday morning, Newman will be ready to hear the sound of basketballs thumping off the gym floor. It's been a long hiatus, not just for the youth, but for my assistant coaches too, he said. For us as a staff, we've been away from the game for quite some time. We're ready to get back in the gym, get back to instruction, and do everything we can to help them become better. This camp will be completely run by my staff. That just gives us a chance to control the environment a little bit more. If you go. Josh Newman Basketball Skills Camps. When? 9 a.m. to noon, June 22nd and 23rd, boys and girls in 3rd through 6th grades. 9 a.m. to noon, June 24th and 25th, boys and girls 7th through 9th grades. Where? UT Permian Basin. Cost, $80. Includes camp basketball. Information or registration, www.utpbbasketballcamps.com. COVID-19 news. By the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 300. Ector County negative 3,652 out of 4,119 tested, with 167 pending. 7 deaths. Midland County, 287 confirmed, 13 deaths. Texas, 99,851 confirmed, with 1,576,925 tested. Total Texas deaths, 2,105. U.S. cases, 2,155,572 total confirmed, and 117,632 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Try a hunt. Downtown Odessa Incorporated has scheduled Oh Say Can You See revitalization hunt from 8 a.m. to 11:45 p.m. Monday through July 3rd in downtown Odessa. How to play. Find the location featured in each clue. Take a selfie in front of each location. Once all 5 locations have been found, send all 5 pictures in one email to llambert@odessa-tx.gov to be entered to win prizes. Include in your email your name, phone number, and the address or name of each location where you took your photo. Be one of the first 20 people each week to get all 5 clues correct and win a prize valued at $100. Every correct photo you submit over the course of 2 weeks will get you a chance at winning the grand prize, a backyard blowout bash party pack valued at more than $1,000. Week 1 clues will be released at 8 a.m. Monday and will need to be sent in by 10 p.m. June 27th to be eligible for prizes. Week 2 clues will be released at 8 a.m. June 28th and will need to be sent in by 8 a.m. July 3rd to be eligible for prizes. Downtown Odessa, Inc. recommends participants follow all guidelines put out by the CDC, State of Texas, Ector County, and the City of Odessa in regards to social distancing while participating in this event. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/Y9RDSPFB. National Safety Council hands out traffic safety awards. Shell Exploration and Production Company of Midland has been named as one of our Driving Concern Texas Employer Traffic Safety Exemplary Award recipients, recently announced by the National Safety Council. Since 2014, our Driving Concern officials have presented these awards annually in conjunction with the Texas Department of Transportation. This year, the actual presentation of the awards was different than in the past, just as our world is different because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Award recipients are featured on the Our Driving Concern website and in social media posts. In addition, a video highlights presentation was shared at the Texas A&M Virtual Traffic Safety Conference, June 10th through 12th. Plaques and banners were mailed to the 12 recipients commemorating their work promoting safe driving behaviors and were asked to share photographs from their own in-person celebrations when it is safe to pull their teams together once again. Working together to keep everyone safe remains a constant, even in this environment. Lisa Robinson, Senior Program Manager with the National Safety Council and head of the Our Driving Concern program, said, "We all have been disheartened to learn about the surge in speeding and reckless driving incidents that have occurred during this time of crisis, both in Texas and across the nation. While our lives have changed, the rules of the road have not. Safety is non-negotiable. Leaders at these organizations understand that." Award recipients exemplify the highest standards of achievement in the field of employee education and outreach. Their training efforts serve as models for Texas employers to emulate in developing or reviewing their own workplace traffic safety or driver behavior programs. This is the seventh year for employer recognition and the fourth straight year NSC and Our Driving Concern have called out traffic safety leaders in three categories. This year, four Texas employers went above and beyond to earn exemplary distinction, and eight others were designated as award recipients, promoting traffic safety at work and encouraging employees to take learnings home. Exemplary award recipients were Shell Exploration and Production Company, City of Arlington, Port of Corpus Christi Authority, and Texas Mutual Insurance Company. Award recipients were City of Austin Public Works Department, City of Irving, City of Waco, Indeca Crude Express, Northside Independent School District, Pioneer Natural Resources, and ProFrac Services, USIC, U.S. Infrastructure Company. The efforts of six other Texas employers are highlighted in the honorable mention category. Honorable mention recipients were Capital Metro, Austin Public Transit, City of El Paso Municipal Court, City of New Braunfels, Faust Distributing Company, San Antonio Municipal Court, and Star Shuttle and Charter. Visit txdrivingconcern.org for more information about the Texas Employers Traffic Safety Awards and the Our Driving Concern program.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.